The Equity Foundation is the professional development arm of MIA Equity and Equity New Zealand. Each year, the Equity Foundation delivers more than 100 masterclasses, workshops, film screenings, In Conversations, international scholarships and on-set internships free of charge for Equity members. We give our thanks to our principal sponsor, Media Super.
Hi everyone, Alex Jones here. I'm just letting you all in and we will get a start. Okay, here we go. Okay, well, good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, rather. As always, welcome to the Equity Foundation's live stream. My name's Alex Jones, and I'm the Program Manager at the Equity Foundation, and today I have the very great pleasure of introducing our special guest, Abby Holmes. Before we commence, I would like to acknowledge the Gadigal people of the Eora Nations and pay my respects to all the traditional owners of country and all throughout our country, and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture, and that this always was and always will be Aboriginal land. And we pay our respects to elders past and present. I want to take a minute to thank the Equity Foundation's principal sponsor, Media Super. Media Super has supported the foundation since our early 2000s. They are your industry super fund and they can help you with your superannuation and provide you with financial advice. And they're fully equipped to assist you to build your superannuation. So don't hesitate to contact them. And if you don't have the contact details, then just check with me and I can put you in contact with the right people. Okay, so please welcome Abby.
Hi, everybody. So thanks for coming on today. It's exciting. I think I'm probably talking to a cohort of people who have never done voiceover and want to find out about it. And some I'm getting from the questions that have been sent through, people who are already working in it or making their way into it and just need to know more. So hopefully I'll cover everything that you need to know and more. You never know. Anyway, so let's start with a really important thing. And that is, this is really, you know, an actor's session. So this is about how is voiceover different from the other acting that we do? Well, clearly, voiceover is from text only, so it's always a script. So you never learn the lines, you never get the script before, you seldom get the script before, certainly in the commercial advertising world, you seldom get the script before to work out how you're going to perform it. That's not the idea of voiceover. Voiceover is actually, even though it's not improv, it's always from a very tightly produced script, it does allow you to be spontaneous. In fact, that's what's required from a voiceover artist, to be spontaneous. And every time you read that script, you read it like it's fresh, that you've never done it and you're doing it for the very first time. So we don't, you know, the other thing is that it is just your disembodied voice. When you're an actor, you've learnt the lines, you've worked out what the motivation is, what your emotional journey is, what the story is, what the other character's story is, all of that kind of stuff. You have all those things in place. You learn the lines and you get in front of an audience and there's 100% you. That's really different from voiceover because it's just your disembodied voice. So you, in a sense, have to carry all of the messages, all of the visual cues, if you like. I mean, you know, sometimes a voiceover, depending on the script, requires you to be a little more animated than you perhaps would have been if you'd learned a role. So, you know, it is about understanding mostly what the script that you have in your hand needs to do. So it's always about the job of the script. And for that, you need to understand that there is a broad, broad church of scripts. And most of them, especially in the advertising world or the world of commercials, they're written from a template. And you need to understand that scripts are different from each other. Differ from each other for a very good reason. And I always talk to people about I kind of put the scripts as a whole under a group of umbrellas. And the first umbrella is the announcer style script, because announcer style was the first style ever done. When back in the 30s and 40s in radio, you would get somebody who was announcing a program that somebody was sponsoring. I always use the Velvet Soap one and say the guy, and it was always a man with a big radio voice, if you know what I mean. Welcome to the Velvet Show. Welcome to tonight's music show, brought to you by Velvet Soap. Put some on your body today. And that was announcer style, because he was making an announcement. So that style is still around, but it's kind of morphed into the next category, which is conversational. Much more of the stuff that we hear on radio or television, if we are listening to a whole read, is conversational, especially in radio, where it sounds like you are talking to somebody. And there are tricks that you need to understand about how you make that kind of script work, because there is no other person there having a conversation with you. But you need to actually, that's when you need to start to second guess your audience. And of course, in voiceover, your audience is really the most important person in your script, because you need to know who you're talking to, why you're talking to them, what the client wants them to do, and how it is you're going to convince them to do it. So that will all be in the language of the script. The next thing you need to do is sort out the language in the script, because there's going to be a lot of words in it, but not all of them are important. So you need to know how to find the language that is about what it's about. So all the words that are about the title or the concept of the commercial will be in the script, and it's your job to find them and favor them. Basically, the way you favor them, and there's very different ways, there's no sort of one rule for that, but it does mean that you need to give them a little bit of time. I always think of things like slightly lifting them above the line, just taking your time through a word, I'll do it in a sentence. So you're taking your time through an important phrase and then getting on with the rest of the script. So with the important phrase was clearly the important phrase. So basically you slow down rather than certainly be louder or bigger, because in voiceover, what you have to try and achieve is a consistent volume and energy throughout anything. So I think what I'll go to now, I'll go to some of those other things under the umbrella. Okay, so there's the announcer style, the conversational style, and announcer style, which is always very stylized writing. When you hit an announcer style script, you usually know it, because when you read it, you need to ask yourself, would I say this in conversation with somebody? And usually the answer is, oh, no, it's a bit clunky. So in order to make a clunky script, an announcer style script, sound conversational, you just do need a bit of work, and you need to do a bit of work, and having good voiceover technique and understanding that it's that kind of script will really help you, instead of going, I'm confused, that's so clunky, I think I want to change it and write it like this. Well, you can never do that. If you're actually in a session and the script is running too long or something, when they've heard it off the page, because sometimes nobody's heard it off the page, it's never been read out loud until they give it to a voice artist in the studio. Sometimes when the voice artist reads it, they'll suddenly go, oh, that sounds a bit clunky, that line, or maybe this bit belongs in the middle or at the front. And so you change things as you go. But if there's a problem and you can see what it is, you might say it's the grammar's bad or the flow is really bad. Read it first out loud, and if nobody notices, then they say, let's give it another take, read it again out loud, and then question it. Oh, I'm just wondering about this phrase. Does that sound a bit clunky to you? Am I not getting it right? And sort of put it back to them. Oh, yeah, it was a bit clunky. I wonder if we could, you know. So that's the way you do it, rather than saying, oh, grammar's really shit in this script, let's change it, because it could be the copywriter sitting out there in the chair, if you know what I mean. So announcer style, conversational style. Then you have retail, which is a huge percentage of all advertising. It's all of the things that you can think of: Bunnings, Officeworks, JB Hi-Fi, on and on and on, Coles, Woolies, on and on, Freedom, on and on and on, you know, all that sort of stuff. Fabulous gigs to get as a voiceover artist, but the proficiency needed to be a good voiceover artist in the retail area is that you do need to be able to read at pace and very clearly and work with the most unnatural set of, you know, script than you ever can ever find anywhere in voiceover. It's very complex because it is so unnatural. It's not even stylized, it's just completely unnatural. A good way to kind of work out whether you're good at this or not is to record some commercials, record a commercial break, you know, preferably radio, where you'll hear a lot of, you hear a lot of commercial on television as well. Retail on television. Record them and then type them out and then see how you go. You know, if you have studios at home, and I'm sure I saw Vikram, I think it was Vikram, who looked like he was sitting in a studio at home. If you don't need a studio set up yet, you just need a good microphone. Always, you know, always put your money into a good microphone. If you feel that this is somewhere you want to go, start with a good microphone. Don't just start with a toy and say, oh, I might get a better one later. Get a good one now. And they're actually not that expensive. I mean, you can get a kit which will consist of a micro. I was going to talk about home studios right at the end. Oh, never mind. You can get a kit for sort of under $500 that will give you a microphone and it's a rack that the microphone sits into, and an interface. So there's my home studio. It's also used to house a vacuum cleaner and a water bottle, all sorts of things. It is a very improvised space, but it works really well. I've got a great microphone. I know what I'm doing. It's just kind of well baffled. It's not soundproof by any means. However, these days, producers, I mean, yesterday I did a little job that was a non-commercial job for a cosmetic company, and it was about 10 minutes long. It was long. I live on a golf course. The guy next door was just mowing his lawn. I could hear it in the distance, but when I checked, I couldn't hear it because the microphone is so good at isolating background noise. And anyway, when it gets to the producer who's going to edit it, he will be able to put it through all of his plugins and de-click, you know, de-breath, take out all the unnecessary breaths, put the clicker through it. For somebody who asks, what do you do with mouth clicks? Well, if you're recording and you're sending it to somebody who wants to put it straight to air or something, then you can just nip out those little clicks. Unfortunately, if the click, a mouth click, falls in a word, you can't remove that. That's impossible. You just have to do it again. So if you can hear yourself doing a mouth click in a sentence, just take a pause, take a breath, do that sentence again, and hopefully you won't hear a mouth click. But whenever I'm clicky, it's always after I've spoken. After I've said something else, and I think, oh, bugger. I used to really worry about it until somebody said, no, don't worry about it. We've got plugins for that. So that's good news. The next thing I want to talk about is, and I'll get back to other questions later, is retail character and character driven, which I put in a kind of same basket, because character and character driven are the two, not the biggest amount of work, even though they're the best fun. So character is determined by the character says who they are first. Hi, I'm Fluffy the house cat. I love my central heating. So the Fluffy the house cat. So then you know it's Fluffy the house cat, and then you get to work out what's going on in the script, because it's not about Fluffy the house cat. It's about the ad, right? Because we're talking about the commercial advertising area at the moment. It's about the ad. So first of all, you have to work out where are the words that are about the ad. So don't begin by making it about your voice. Always begin by making it about what is the message in this ad, and then who am I and what do I sound like, to which is to do with the ad. I mean, okay, they've created a cat. You can kind of go, created a cat because, oh, yeah, cats like laying in front of warm things. Then you kind of get some clues to what your character may be like. Then there's character-driven, which are all of the ads that you hear on air and you go, what is this ad about? I have no idea what this ad is about. This is just a person telling a story. These I always call the actor's things, because they're like a little monologue. They're like a little performance. They are a performance. But, of course, they have a concept that's attached to it. And usually the only time we find out what this ad is about is we get to the end, and another voice, usually another voice, almost always another voice, will come in with the tag. So get into IKEA for your storage solutions. You go, oh, it was about storage. IKEA, got it. So there's sort of more subtle advertising, but and great to do, great fun to do, brilliant, but not much of it. But across the board, in a lot of advertising, and somebody asked the question, what was it? It was, is versatility an asset or a handicap in voiceover? And really my question back to that is, what let's look at what is versatility in voice acting? Because somebody could be thinking, well, versatility is, oh, I can do a whole heap of accents. I can do Scottish and Norwegian and South African, and I can do all of these fabulous accents. That's not necessarily in Australia, in this market, or in any market really, the versatility that's going to get you a position in a voiceover roster. Where the versatility comes is how you approach scripts. So it's basically, what is this script? What is it about? Who am I talking to? Is it a broad market, or is it a very specific market? I mean, you might get a script as somebody who is in your 40s but still has a young sounding voice, and it's actually for a toy. So you think, well, who is the market? Am I talking to kids or am I talking to adults? You know, that's a question that you ask at the job. But you need to always know who you're talking to, and always have in mind that you are actually delivering this to somebody. And the other thing is, when you're talking about commercials, is that you're talking about a half-listening audience. Most people don't tune into the commercials unless they perceive it's interesting to them. And that's where advertising is really clever, because what advertising usually does is make sure that all of the key, well, certainly the bait phrase, I call it the bait phrase, which is usually happens in the first line, right? Which talks about who the audience is and maybe what problem they're having that their product will solve. And once you start listening to it, it's actually called the problem solution structure. And when you actually hear it, you start to listen for it, it's everywhere. It's everywhere, because that's how advertising sets up the quick grab to get you interested. So you with your half listening audience have to make sure that you get them in that first few seconds. And if you notice, when you're browsing online, there's a lot of 6 second commercials online. You get a skip button after 3 seconds. Do you know how many words they can shove at you in 3 seconds? 12. And sometimes you can get your whole message of what the problem is or what they're selling in 12 words, in 3 seconds. So, you know, often when you're browsing and when it says skip, don't skip, just listen on and listen for how this was structured. Because really, you know, your work as a voiceover artist, or wanting to be a voiceover artist, is a lot of listening to what else is out there in all the mediums that you're hearing voices. So you get to judge, oh, that was shit. Oh, that sounded like AI, the bane of our life. Oh, that was really good read. Oh, should have recorded that so I could work out what that person was doing. And I think one of the ways that you can do that yourself is research the voiceover agents. Somebody did ask a question about who are the top 5 voiceover agents. I'll give them to you now. I'll give you mine first because it's my favorite. EM Voices. Yeah. Then there is my second favorite. Oh, I love these girls. Scout Management. Beautiful. Beautiful. The next one that I would favor would be Sophie German with a J-E-R-M-Y-N. There is also RMK. So they're all in Sydney. In Perth, there is, I've just forgotten her name. Sorry. Anyway, there's one in Perth, just a Perth voiceover agent. And there's one in Melbourne, which is Melbourne Voices Management, right? There's Kuba Auckland up in Brisbane. And there is another mob called Big Mouth, which is based in New Zealand but has a property in Australia. That is also an online agency. The others are kind of, they are set up to function for the advertising industry and are not online. I mean, they're online because they have a website. In fact, they have amazing websites. But what I mean is that with Big Mouth, you get the work online. So there are some, you know, if you're set up there, you can see posts that people have been put up looking for this person or that person. So the reason I like Big Mouth is that the fees are kosher. And that's the most important thing when you're out there looking for different places to go. So there's the voiceover agents, which will be great for your research, because what you want to put into their search engine is you. And you want to start listening to voiceover artists who maybe are doing the kind of work that you think you'd be good at, or you'd be cast at, or you would like to do. And I must just add a rider to that. There is the, I really want to do that kind of work, but maybe you don't actually have the kind of voice that gets that kind of work, or maybe there's something different about your voice that the industry will buy for certain kinds of work. And I think the hardest thing for voice artists wanting to get into the game is the hardest things to work out is what kind of voiceover artist will I be? What kind of voice artist could I be? What am I good at? What skills am I great at? So characterful reads are the ones where this is how you create versatility. Characterful reads are when you jump into somebody else's shoes. Like I'll just do something where I'm jumping into somebody else's shoes and not using a voice that's very different from my own. Well, I was just standing here next to my boyfriend, and I mean, we were waiting for the Uber, and I turned around and he just disappeared. And that could be a, I don't know, an ad for whatever, I don't know. But do you see what I mean? It's like what I did was I put myself in the environment, not me. I jumped into that girl's shoes who was standing next to her boyfriend waiting for an Uber. So it's not that different, but those kind of reads are what creates the versatility. And the next read in your script might be something that's more thoughtful. If we stopped to think for a moment what we were doing, we might make a different decision around that. You know what I mean? That is how you get versatility. So that's about microphone technique. How far am I away from the microphone? What's my volume like? And volume, be very careful with volume, because the digital medium does not like loud. And if anybody's practicing at home, what I want you to do is practice at finding your volume. And of course, when you've got your digital audio workstation, the DAW, which is just whatever platform you're using to record on, whether it's whatever it is, you know, Reaper or Pro Tools or any of the other ones, then you will start to play with that, and you will start to create versatility by different volume settings. That's just your setting, as in talking like this or talking like this, right? Very different. You would think, oh, that sounded like a different person. That's really what you want to do on your demo, because versatility is sounds like a different person, but is that same person who we know we can trust and is versatile? So not only can we trust them, when we get them into the studio, we say, I reckon take 5 years off it and just give it a bit more energy, because they've heard you do that on a demo. So they already know versatility is not something you could impose. It's not like a cloak you put on or a costume you put on. It's something that has to come kind of uniquely from you. So that is the characterful. Oh, just look at my notes. So really, you probably all know this, and you're probably all great at it, but some people might determine that they are not great sight readers. Sight reading is just picking up any piece of anything and being able to read it pretty cleanly without falling over things and making mistakes or sounding bored. You know, reading ahead, and a lot of people who do work in the arts can read ahead 4 to 6 words. That always gives you the ability to know where you're headed. So you really need to know as a voiceover artist where you are, where you've been, as in what you just said before, so where you are now, and therefore counting those two things together, where you're headed. Oh, I said that word already, so next time I say it, it won't be as important. Oh, what's the word before it or after it that's more important? Oh, it's that one. So this is all about script technique and the things that you need to know in order to be a believable, masterful, proficient voiceover artist. So having a good vocabulary is really important. So, you know, I know these days a lot of people listen to a lot of material. Listen, listen, listen. You know, you probably hear things and you probably hear words and you think, oh, I never heard that word before, or I wonder what that word really means, because I've heard it in the context, but what does it actually mean? It's a really important thing for you to start becoming deeply curious about language and vocabulary, because that's going to carry you a long way in the arts anyway, in any kind of work that you do. So just get more familiar with that. I've gone on, written word is different from spoken word. I think I've covered these, but so when you're interpreting the language in the script, you know, I've talked about the advertising language and the keywords and the phrases. It is really that sometimes there will be emotional words in the script. Look for emotional words, because they are words that you can just work with a little bit. It may not be a key word or a key phrase. It might not be about the product, but it could be. I mean, something like this. If you've been feeling anxious about getting a home loan, so can everybody hear which is the emotional word in that one? If you've been feeling anxious about getting a home loan, so it's clearly home, getting a home loan is the key phrase. If you've been feeling anxious about, it's anxious. So if you got that, beautiful. So it's not if you've been feeling anxious about getting a home loan doesn't mean as much as if you've been feeling anxious about getting a home loan. Anxious. You just put it on the word, just on the word. It's beautiful. Because you can't say, if you've been feeling anxious about getting a home loan, it'll be wrong. It won't work. So just that one little word. And often when they say sensual, be sensual, we want it big. You can't be sensual through the whole read. It'll sound like you're doing a porno. So the idea is that you're just sensual on a word. Find the word that is the word that you can be sensual on. Might even be the word sensual. Who knows? So, and read your audience. Really know who that audience is. And that's that thing about always having in your head that it's not just about your fabulous voice. Your performance is all about them. You know, in advertising, that's what you get the big bucks for. Now I might move on to, I will tell you this, that advertising is about seduction and manipulation. And now I'll move to, and in the nicest possible way, but it is to seduce you into doing what you didn't think you wanted to do before you heard that ad. And the manipulation is in how they craft the language to convince you that this is the right thing to do, and you just never look back if you do it. It's clever. And, you know, you have to do it in 15 seconds sometimes. 15 seconds, it's not long. But as I said, you know, it can be 35 or 36 words, so they can get a lot of stuff in there. So the other thing that's a great, so commercial world, that's the biggest world. That's where you would get the most work. So there's advertising agencies who deal with sound studios, with big clients who have an annual budget spend. Radio stations are set up like little kind of ad agencies themselves, and radio stations are all networked now. They're all married to each other. And you will just record at that radio station. But of course, sound recording studios do radio campaigns from those big company advertising agencies. Sound recording studios are always looking for really interesting people who know what they're doing. This is unfortunately not an area, not when you're trying to get into the commercial area where the big bucks are, where people will give you a go. They won't say, oh, come in and have a read and see how you go. They just won't do it. It's too, studio costs are too expensive. Time is of the essence. They want to know that the person they have in there, they can absolutely trust to come up with the job. They're always looking for people who they think would be great at this, have the right kind of voice, have the right kind of style, haven't had a lot of experience, but can be produced. So this is a really important thing for you to know too. You're probably not going to get a voiceover agent if you haven't actually worked in voiceover. So what you do first, and you don't need an agent to work in voiceover, all you need is a really shit hot demo that says you know exactly what you're doing. You actually understand what a script is. You understand what keywords and phrases are. You know who you're talking to, and you can find a way to present that. And then show with the next read and the next read after your versatility, which is, like I said before, about your range is more technical than anything. And of course, the other two things about versatility is pace and energy. So we had volume, but pace and energy are really important for versatility too. So you might have a character who talks really fast because she needs to talk really fast because she's doing a retail ad and there's a whole lot of words in it. And then you might get a character who's thinking about insurance and wondering whether it should be for the dog or maybe that's a waste of money. So you can see how already you create versatility by just varying the pace. So those kind of things are the things you want to think about. And whatever scripts you have at home that you want to practice on or record things off air, you can even, you know, record something off somebody's voiceover demo. It's a bit cheeky, but it's just for your practice. I wouldn't say go and add it to your demo that you're going to send out to people. So really, before you make that demo, make sure you know what you're doing. And making a demo, it's a bit hard to do it from home unless you are an expert in creating something that sounds like somebody booked you to go into a studio, gave you the script, you trotted it out brilliantly, then they added the production to it, and then it went to air. If you can't make something sound like you are already working in voiceover, then it's going to be very difficult for you to get a job because they'll go, oh, sounds like a beginner. I'm not sure. Okay, they're not bad, not bad. Some studios will say, we really like you. We like your voice. We like something about you. We'd like to meet you. Come down. We might throw a few scripts at you and see how you go. Just in a, because they're the high-end agencies, the high-end studios will always be looking for somebody new to offer up to their advertising agencies who favour them. Mate, a guy sent me a demo last week. He's amazing. Never heard anybody like him. Had a girl, had this really cute, quirky voice. Had a woman in her 50s. Oh, beautiful reader. I mean, really great. Don't know where she came from, but she's good. So it'll be like that. They will always be looking for somebody who is offering something different. But as you know, if you listen a lot to voices out there, there are some things that just seem to sit right with advertising agencies. It's a particular kind of voice. It has a particular kind of, I don't know what it is. If I knew that, I could bottle it and sell it. I don't know what it is. I really don't know. Just some voices are popular. But especially for animation, some voices are distinctly quirky. And sometimes animation is not looking for you to be able to do a character voice. They'll be looking for a voice, a person who just sounds like that, who just fits absolutely the character that they want to animate. So, you know, animation is different. And of course, you don't need a voiceover agent to get to audition for animation. If you already have a theatrical agent, the call out, the audition material will be sent to all agents, voiceover agents and theatrical agents, usually across Australia, for people to submit their animation demo. Before I get onto animation, though, I'll just finish with the non-commercial world. So the non-commercial world is the world of business and the internet. It's on-hold messaging. It's interactive voice response recording for banks or insurance companies. Welcome to the National. Oh, that's very old. That's because I used to do it 20 years ago. Now it's called the NAB, and a terrible voice guy does it now. Awful, because they always want to save money. Top and tails of podcasts, openers for events, you know. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's presentation of blah, and thank you for coming tonight. Take your little goodie bag as you walk out the door. Things like that. That is the non-commercial area. The difference between non-commercial and commercial is that commercial is paid media. So everybody has to pay to get a spot on radio, television, online, wherever. But non-commercial is not. But most of the non-commercial work we do is stuff that is, they call it in-house, that is not for public, it's not for public consumption. It's something that's been made to advise. Say, I'll give an example of the cosmetic thing that I did yesterday. It's about a cosmetic company that has a new product for beauty salons. So it's basically like a little training for the girls in the beauty salons, right? 10 minutes long. It's about all they can handle. So those kind of things, they're tricky to do. They do take, is it a degree of proficiency? And you just have to work out who you are. You know, it is quite... dry, it can be dry. A lot of the stuff can be dry. I'm doing something for the ATO. That's very dry. About how to dob in people who are getting black money. I don't think so. Anyway. Okay, so finding out where you'd fit is really the most important thing. And if anybody's ever done any coaching with a voiceover coach here, you will understand that you realize that there's a whole lot of things you don't know about it. So reading about voiceover is great. There are a lot of blog places out there. You can just, I don't know, I've never done it. I'm sure you can Google blogs about voiceover. I have a website called voiceovercoach.com.au and I create blogs. It's just free stuff. I've been doing it for some years and I create them so that they're like little coaching modules on specific aspects of voiceover or specific aspects of the industry. So read those. And in some of those, I've given links to other blogs of interest too that will, you know, help you. So reading more is really important. I think you can get podcasts about voiceover. I'm pretty sure you may get a lot in America. I mean, it's very interesting. There are a lot of the ways we approach voiceover scripts and voiceover is very similar the world around. It's always about who you're talking to and what they need. You know, in the actual non-commercial world, you're doing more information instructional delivery than entertainment, which is what you'll get in commercial advertising. It can be very entertaining. It can be funny. It can be very deeply emotional. But in the non-commercial world, you will get, it's pretty straight information. But of course, in there, rather than you're talking to a half-listening audience, you're talking to a captive audience. They have to be watching it because, or they want to be watching it because they're interested, or they have to be watching it because it's part of what they need to learn for their job or how to something. So understanding and putting your person in there and understanding how much time it takes for them to be getting a piece of information. You know, information is, what have I got to hand that I could read? That's audiobook? No, nothing. Anyway, whatever. But information is about, you give a piece of information and you need to leave at least a 2-beat count before you go on to the next piece of information or read on, because people need to have a little gap in you talking at them so that that can just compute in the brain. And it really does only take a couple of seconds. I work on a 1-beat, 2-beat pause system where between lines or a thought that's finishing, just 1 beat before you go on to the next thing. And then you go on to the next thing. And because it might be an important piece of information that you have to tell them and make sure they get it, I would leave 2 beats and then move on to the next thing. So that's sort of the difference between radio and between commercial and non-commercial. Most of the non-commercial is going to be about information delivery or instructional delivery. If you think about e-learning, which is what a lot of that stuff is, it is actually about learning. So, yeah. Let's talk about animation and games. So games is actually growing in Australia, but of course games is big around the world. And you really need to find some of the places who are looking for voices for their games. Now, this warning, this may not be paid work because they may be gamers who are building a project. But if you're interested in this area, sometimes the way that you get a foot in the door or you actually get to be a proficient game voice is that you do it for nothing. There's a wonderful voice artist here in Australia called Amy Smith, A-I-M-E-E, or is it A-M-I-E? Yeah. Amy Smith, she's with EM Voices, but she wasn't always. She just had a real knockabout job, and she thought, I'm really interested in doing character voices for animation. And so she found a website that, you know, she put in some submissions and she got a gig and then she got another gig and then she did something that actually went off. So it took off and she got known as the voice of blah. Then she became more proficient. This took her about a decade, I'll say, to build a fantastic voiceover career in something that she knew she had skills at, didn't really understand the world. So she went out and about to learn about the world. And then she thought, I could have a career at this. And now she has one. So it can be slow when you first start. Also, you may get on Star Now. It used to be that Star Now was like for voice artists looking for work because a lot of the things were non-paid or not equity minimum. That's unfortunate. However, there are a lot more, I've been told, people posting things on there that are correct rates. So for that, you need to look either at the equity. So equity negotiates with the advertising industry itself. That's where our agreements are for voiceover. And of course, we have a wonderful animation agreement as well. We can't capture anybody in the games industry at all for long enough to create any kind of conversation or rate structure with them. They're still doing it a bit piecemeal. It's growing, but a lot of gamers just use themselves or their friends to do the voices. It's a lot less about the functionality of the game now. It's much more about the narratives, and so that is where voice artists will get into it. But it really does take your own exploration of the internet to find out where these animation places are. These games places are. As far as animation is concerned, it's quite small in Australia, really, compared to, say, the States. However, there is work there. How you get that work is different from voiceover, because for voiceover, you need a voiceover demo. And when you listen to other voices on the voiceover websites that have the big search engine, you will see with some people's profiles that they have several different voice demos designating different types of things that they are now proficient at. We've got a compilation demo, which will show what you're good at, what you're clever at. But and then some people will have, I've done a whole range of retail reads, and this is my scope of retail reads. I do character reads, here are my character voices. You can also have a character voice or retail read on a compilation demo, but because it's only 2 minutes, you're basically short. You're it's abbreviated to this is me showing off how good I can. You can trust me. I'm showing off a little bit, but so there you go. And you can have all different kinds of. You can have narration, or you can have sort of non-commercial reads. The difference between a demo for voiceover, which should be about 2 minutes long. If you're really, really, if you've got so much material because you're so good at different voices and different character voices, make a character demo, right? But have some character in there to let people know that you do good characters. And if you're really versatile with characters, have your natural voice and have the character voices go. If you can do younger, then go younger. If you can do older, go older, and then you sit in the middle. So people get from that there is a possible range there, but they just haven't heard it all yet, and they might like to hear more. So you will also see that people have videos on their profile in some of the voiceover agents. Videos is kind of useful, that they will mostly be from the non-commercial area where they'll be a little bit longer. And of course, often that's a voice that is also talking to images, because the non-commercial side is all just about always audio visual, unless it's just a top and tail for a podcast or an events or something, or an IVR, you know what I mean? Those voice prompt things in banks or whatever. So I just lost my train of thought there.
You were talking about animation. I don't know if you'd finished talking about animation and.
Thank you. Thank you. I was talking about animation. So animation, if you want to get work in animation, then Google animation producers who are looking for voice artists. Don't just, if you do Animation Producers Australia, you'll just get everybody who's making animation. You go, oh, no, nothing there. But if you're more specific, so animation producers looking for voice artists or voiceover artists. And then you will get it more finely searched, and you will get some places who are looking for, genuinely looking for voiceover artists. But I would also do animation producers in whatever town you're in, and making a demo for animation producers if you are not currently working in voiceover, not represented by a voice artist, and no studio knows how great you are, what a quirky voice you have, or how great you are at character voices, how are you going to get that? How are you going to get in front of a producer? I mean, it will happen if your agent gives you a whole lot of stuff to audition from. And when we get it through EM Voices, they just send it to us holus bolus. Here are all the characters. Just pick ones you want to audition for and follow the notes. Follow the notes is an important thing. Follow the notes. Because they will ask for specific things like don't slate it, which means don't say your name, you know, that one. Just do one take. Don't do three takes because they'll go, doesn't take direction very well. So there's all those kind of things. So in a way, you have to show your proficiency by understanding just what they're calling for. But I will say this is really important for people who are auditioning for animation, is that what they're looking for is somebody who's going to offer more. This is part of the question about what do clients like about voiceover artists the most? What gets you the next gig? And it really is that how much do you contribute to the possible great outcome of this product? You know, in any voiceover script or in any animation script or in anything, there's always another way, another take on a line or another take on a word. I'll stay with animation because what you want to add in your audition, you'll just get the lines. And sometimes it could be a conversation. They just want you to do the lines. But what you need to do is really see yourself in the environment. See yourself in the scene with the other characters around you. Imagine them, right? Really, really imagine them deeply. Then imagine what they're doing with their body, because animation is all about body, because you've got a character and it's animate. It's animate. It's all doing things about its face and it's all doing that kind of stuff. So if you do things outside of the words, I call it a flourish, but it's basically just an affectation. It can be, well, I would have never said that. So the words were, well, I would never have said that, or whatever. But I did the, those kind of things an animator can animate. So producers are looking at somebody who does that naturally and makes it sound like it belongs in the scene, the reaction. And that is actually looked on very favorably. So when you're doing that audition, really listen to it forensically for anything that sounds too overdone, overplayed, doesn't fit, whatever. But when you're recording at your home studio, you get to practice and you get to record the line after line. It's like I was saying before, if you've got something that's a mouth click in a word, you've got to be listening for it, you've got to hear it. Then you just stop, take a breath, and go again, nice and clean. Then you can cut out the one that was a shitty one in your recording thing and just stitch it all together. So editing is a really important thing for you to start learning if you have a home studio. So that is animation and games. I'll go to audiobook now because I'm sure there'll be some people here who are quite cognizant of the fact that the audiobook world is just growing and growing and growing. So I've loved doing audiobooks since started doing them in 2018 because I have a daughter with autism. She needed me. I had to be home. An audiobook is a really big investment, a big time investment, a big creative investment. But boy, does it pay off. I mean, you have to be careful. You have to get a book you love. Doing a book that doesn't float your boat is agony, actually, in my eyes. And I did one early on in my career and I thought, oh, I'm never doing that kind of romance novel ever again. But, you know, so sometimes an audition will come through and I go, not interested in that one. Sometimes it comes through, that piques my interest. So that's the one you audition for. But to get an audition, you want people to know you. Now, this is a really simple audiobooks is the simplest way to create a demo or audition. Basically, you get a book. A contemporary Australian book is better because that's what we make most here, contemporary Australian titles. Although we do, within those books, you will get a variety of different accents and characters. So having the ability to drop out of narrator voice into characters. The difference between the narrator voice and the characters is that the narrator is talking directly to the listening audience, and the characters are in a scene with each other. So they're in an environment. So, you know, the narrator voice is the strongest voice. When I say strong, I mean as in through the book. But of course, the narrator voice, the read level of a narrator voice is less than even what I'm using now. It's actually much more like this. So because you're very, very close to mic, because if you think that people are listening to it through earbuds or headphones, it's deeply intimate. I mean, you can't sound like it's intimate, but it's an intimate level of voice. And when you go into the characters who are in the scene, they're no louder. They just have a different energy. So it's that thing about understanding volume and energy. You know, you can't be louder. Even if somebody, they say, shout, hey, get out of there. It's got to be the shout has to be the same as, I'm just going to go and get a glass of milk. You know, it's got to be the same level, volume level. Audiobook. Oh, yeah. Oh, and audiobook podcasts. There's an audiobook podcast that I've been involved in since not long, well, actually before I started doing books. Because they said, the studio who does audiobooks said, will you come on and be, can you be the technique coach? I said, yeah, sure. And of course, I'd never done a book. And so the first few podcasts are me asking a whole lot of questions, because I sort of thought, maybe I do want to do a book. So it's very interesting to listen to them. Then I started to do books, then I got more, then I knew more about the industry. Because what I realized was I could coach people on audiobook technique, not a problem. But did I know about the industry? Not really. I don't know how it all works. So I went and learned how it all works by doing the podcasts and doing the books. So it's an amazing journey if you want to do that. But making a demo is easy. You just get a book that's a contemporary Australian title that you would be likely to be cast for. So for that, you know, you can do a reading of a book that has already been published and is up on Audible or any of the others. I use Audible. You can do something that really suits you. And you just need 1 to 2 minutes of reading. Find something in there. If it's a book that has multiple characters in it, find a little bit that gives you a chance to show that you can do a couple of characters in a scene. The thing about audiobooks that people often ask me is actually about, how do you do males if you're a female, females if you're a male? So that's actually about, we all know that there's one narrator reading the book. So you have to actually prep the book really, really solidly to know how to read the book. So book prep is really important. I mean, Bolinda Audio, B-O-L-I-N-D-A, they are the biggest audio producers in Australia. Quite stingy payers, haven't really upped their rates very much for a long time. Won't talk to the union, not interested, boring. However, it's a rung to get on. I mean, I did a lot of books with them. They're lovely people who work out there. Yes, the girl who owns it's a bit stingy with payment, but they do give you a prep fee. The minimum rate is $120 per recorded hour. That means if it takes you 2 hours to record the book, you've only earned $60 an hour. You get me? So if it takes 2 hours to do a recorded hour, that's what you get paid. But they will pay you $190 for a prep fee for a book that is running about 10 to 12 hours. So add that, you know, $19, $20 an hour to that fee. So it's $140 per recorded hour, which is a little bit better. It's not too bad, but it's quite a time investment. You want to love reading, and that's why you want to love the book, because you want to love it. You want to really love reading. And some of the most satisfying work I've done in my career has actually been audiobooks, which is one of the only times I've ever found myself in flow in an audiobook. When the engineer, because when you make a mistake, because you have an engineer there, people say, can do an audiobook from home. Be warned, that can be a really terrible experience. I reckon if you do a book from home, your first book from home, never done it before, you'll never do it again. Or unless you're incredibly committed to it and passionate about it. But the thing is, recording it at home means that you need to record it cleanly. So you need for that either a whole lot of plugins or a very, very soundproof booth. So that one would not service, but it's fine for commercials that have a jingle or things where I'm sending it to a producer who can tidy it all up. Oh, somebody's just said, sorry, Ab, could you repeat that?
It's Alex here. The prep fee for a book?
Right. So Belinda is the stingiest, $120 per recorded hour. However, they give you a prep fee of $190 for prepping your book in your own time. So before you go to the studio, you have to thoroughly read that book. I mean, you have to get into the author's head. What's the author getting at here? What are all the themes? It's not just read the words. It's really got to deep dive that book. It's a forensic kind of job. And really understand what's going on and really know where you've been, where you are, where you're headed. It really is a deep dive. You can't just glance at those words and hope your nice voice is going to sound good. You have to have the meaning. So, did that answer your question? Good. I think good. Okay. So the samples can...
On that, did you say that that Belinda provides the studio then and you go into the studio?
Yes, Belinda has studios. They don't require people to work from a home studio. They have, I think they run three studios out of Tullamarine, and they have a studio in South Yarra, and I'm not sure what they have in other states, but it's quite possible that they do. So Belinda is really the place to send things because they record a lot of material. So that's a great place to start. Belinda also have kind of open days, I think they call them, where they will send you a stack of text, different kind of text, and you get half an hour. You just get half an hour and you choose what you would like to do. So I would say if you are versatile, I mean, and you will get in there a first-person narration. That's my favourite. We'll have characters probably. A third-person narration. I always find that difficult because I always wonder who I am as the narrator. That's like the last thing I decide what I sound like with the narrator. I always get it pretty quickly with first-person, and a lot of you will be exactly like that because it's a performance. The narrator's more like a, not like a voiceover. I mean, you're still telling a story, but it's just, there's not as much character in it. Well, there can be. Oh, I don't know. And then you've got memoir, which is really first person. And often memoir is read by the person who wrote it. But of course, often, and I did one late last year, the person who wrote it is not, she's not, she gets it, but she still can't read it really well. She's not getting the meaning, not a performance, and you need to perform it. Does anybody have any other questions about audiobook narration? Oh, yeah, I'll just go more on the open day. So you will choose from the list, and they sent, and I saw the stuff that was sent, and there are about a dozen pieces on there that people could choose from. So go carefully and try and make them. If you're doing two, that's pretty good because, you know, you'll only be getting probably a couple, 2 or 3 minutes of reading, but you have to leave room for chatting to the engineer and making mistakes and try not to do too many of those. But of course, what they will do in the studio is when you make a mistake in voiceover, in audiobook narration, they go back to where you fell over to the end of the last sentence or the last part of a sentence where you fell over, and they will go back about 10 seconds before. So you will hear what you read 10 seconds before, up to the point at which you then go on. So you always be ready, take breath to start where they just drop you in, you know, kind of like a second after you said the last thing. And that's the way they do it because they have to keep it clean. And your producer stroke engineer will be watching and say, you know, you just fell over that word, or I'm not sure if that's the way that word's pronounced, because one of the things that you do in book prep is that you look up all of the words that you, I know how to pronounce that. Actually, I think it might be ambiguous, so let's look it up. And you will find that, yes, there may be one or two or several pronunciations for something. You know, if it's a book where you've got French characters in there and it's written in English, but it's a French word, the question is, do I actually, I'm an Australian narrator, do I pronounce that word in French because this is a French style book? You know, there's always those questions. So, you know, I often actually need to talk to the author, not the publisher, go straight to the author, but request fairly early on if you're getting into the book and you go, oh, there's a lot of things here I need to ask the author. Then that's what you do about style. And I'm doing one that I'm starting to record this week, which has multiple voices. So the author is first person narration, but there are voices in her head and there are three of them and they have very distinctive personalities, right? But they are, how they present in the book is that they're written in different fonts. So there's a bold font, then there is an italic bold, and then there is an italic faint. So they're the three voices. So you have to get over which one am I speaking in. So you can see how much work it takes. But once you get into the studio, you need to be well and truly prepped. And that's the joy. And of course, this is one of the reasons why you wouldn't do it alone. Because you do it and you record it and you send it off for checking. And the checkers come back and say, oh, in the third paragraph on page 4, we're just wondering if you could say that word differently, blah. I mean, I don't know whether everybody's listened to Chai Time at Cinnamon Gardens. Whew. Amazing, incredible narration. Anyway, fabulous narration, but a really complex narration where she needed to pronounce a lot of Sri Lankan words and language and even speak in the Sri Lankan language. The things like that will hold your book prep up. So that, you know, that money that you're getting, that $190, it's like, you know, say it takes you 20 hours to prep your 10-hour book because of all of the things you have to look up and the questions with the author and all that sort of stuff, then that's kind of, it's been a long time since you worked for, you know, $10 an hour, isn't it? If you know what I'm saying. So, but that's just the way it is at the moment, at the moment. Any other questions on audiobook? Oh, sorry, Alex, I've gone outside what we decided to do.
No, that's fine.
Yeah. Any other questions on audiobooks? Great. Okay. Now, somebody asked how to package to an agent, how to send voiceovers and how to package to an agent. So I mentioned the 2-minute demo. So that's really important. Make that amazing. And then also the first thing you need to do, package to an agent, is work out which agent you're going to go to. So you have to be really, really cognizant of who they have on their books who's like you. If there's a whole lot of people like you, they're going to say, oh, sorry, we've got a whole lot of people like you. So you want to look for somebody who's got people who are not like you, ideally, or not too many that are like you. That's the best way to do it. So first of all, do that kind of research. And would you fit into that agency? Then, of course, you can be anywhere in Australia and be represented by those agents in Sydney. I mean, I'm in Melbourne and I've had a Sydney agent for, you know, about 17 years. If you know somebody who's with that agent, get in touch with them and get them to sort of give you the lowdown on who's there and what happens and what they like, what they don't like. Because really having an agent is not the be all and end all. I mean, I think it's a great way to position yourself. When you've done some work and you're ready to do more and lift your profile, then it's great to position yourself with an agent. I mean, that's why I went there. Also, I went there, well, I didn't do this, but I noticed when I did go there that they listed back in the day all of their artists from alphabetical name from their Christian name, and I'm AB, so I was like, yeah, good. But I don't think they do that anymore. So
Abby, there is one more question about the audiobooks. You have your familiar
yes.
with that?
Mm-hmm.
With the open day at Belinda, who are they for? Is it for them to get to know new artists? Do you go into the studio to participate?
Yeah. It's a whole day, and when you get in touch with them, you say, I'm interested in your open day. I have a feeling they're inviting people to their open day who have sent them a little audition. Because what they wanted to do, they've heard your audition. They go, interesting. I think we could use this person. Then they want to meet you and they want to see how you fly in the studio. Well, the engineer, what does the engineer think about this person? Oh, this person was so great. Or this person was so nervous. Or this person made a lot of mistakes. It's all of those things are going to be, the thing. So it's always at the studio in Tullamarine. You will be given a time and it will be a half hour slot. So has that answered it? Yeah, looks like it. If that was Petronella. Was it Petronella? Yeah, great. Anyway, so before you do that audition, make sure you are really, really good at your theatrical agent, Emily's theatrical agent manages your voiceover. That's good. I hope they're a good one, because the thing about it is it's also good to have a relationship with the studios. And sometimes if you do a job, you can get the copy of that job. You should be doing this anyway. If you're doing voiceover already, when you've done a job that you think, oh, that was actually really good, see if you can get a copy. Just an MP3 is fine, right? But they'll probably, a WAV is better, of course, but an MP3 is fine. Get them to send you that job and do it sooner than later, because sometimes they archive jobs and it's a bit of a schlep for them to actually go to the archives and pull up. You don't want to be a nuisance. So as soon as you've done the job that you think that was pretty good, ask if it's possible to get a copy sent to you. They'll be quite happy to do it as long as it's easy to do, yeah? And that will mean that if this is a really good job, you can send. You don't have to ask your agent to do it. You do it, because it's communication from you. You send it out to the studios that have given you favorable feedback on your demo, or you haven't worked with but you would like to, or, you know, that you've worked with or that you've worked with. And you just say, hey, I thought you'd like to hear this this job that I recorded recently. Love to see you soon. Love to work with you soon. Something like that. That kind of marketing is marketing that your agent won't do for you. Your agent will take bookings for you. But this is important for you to know. Working, you don't need an agent to be a voiceover artist. And if you are a voiceover agent without a voiceover artist without an agent, you need to do a lot of your own marketing work. That is, it's no point just sending a voice demo to a studio and keeping your fingers crossed, because lots of people send voiceovers demos to studios and they kind of go down the line and they just sort of disappear. If you just keep reminding them that you're there just every couple of months or 3 months or something, that's going to go a long way to you actually eventually getting in there. They go, I remember her demo was good. Oh, and this is a good job. That's actually great, because we've got a job coming up. I might include her in the casting list for that job, because advertising agencies will call a studio and they'll say, we want to do a job next week for some product that they'll mention, some brand that they're trying to sell. And we're looking for a particular kind of voice. Oh, we want a guy in his 40s, kind of sounds like a bit of a dad next door. Or we're looking for a woman who's really healthy, fit, got that really great vitality voice, you know. So send us through some stuff. So they will go through voice demos for people who might fit that brief, and they will put maybe half a dozen, just take a little clip off their demos and put that together and just send it, voice 1 to 6 or whatever, to that agency. And the agency may say, wow, get me voice 4, fantastic, perfect. Or thinking about, we like voice 2, 5, and 6, so could you get them down to the studio for a submission? Then you'll be invited to the studio. In fact, what they'll do before they send out that 6 samples of people that they think are good, they will contact you and say, would you be available for a voiceover week beginning the 15th of March or whatever? You go, yeah, I would. But you might not get it. You know what I mean? There might never be a call back. They might say, could we put you on hold for a voiceover on this day, on Tuesday afternoon at 3 o'clock? Yes, but it still might not be you. The hold might go away. It still happens to me. It happens to anybody, because it is about who at the end of the day, we're considering these people, but who at the end of the day is going to get the gig? Well, there's only one gig. It's the same as any kind of auditioning we do. However, the thing that you want to take away from that is that you were considered as being somebody who could do that job. So that's like a really huge tick. So see it as the big green tick emoji, because and keep that studio in mind to send other things to, right? So that's the kind of marketing you want to do.
Great, thank you. That was very helpful.
Good.
Abby, there are a few questions. Shall I read them out?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, well, the second part of that question is, if the theatrical agent manages the voiceover bookings and they're sporadic, is it more beneficial having a specific voiceover agent like EM Voices?
A lot of people have a specific voiceover agent. To get a specific voiceover agent, you need to be established in voiceover. So yes, it's a good thing. I mean, I was with Joanna Milosz, JM agency, before she retired. And I said, when I joined the agency, I said, so how do you feel about, you know, the fact that I've got a voiceover agent? And she said, well, what can I do? She was Polish. So, you know, what can they do? You want to, don't forget your agent works for you. You know, you want to manage your things. I think agents can get a bit sticky when you're, you certainly don't want two agents, and we know that one. But if you're doing a lot of online work, your own, RMK are very sticky about that. I know them as an agency, you'll just be cancelled from the agency. My agency just says, go for it. Just do whatever you need to do. I don't put all my audiobooks through my agent. If I get an audiobook from a contact that I've made, then I do that, because, you know, you're giving your agent an awful lot of money to invoice. You're not getting a whole lot of money and you've done all the work. So my agent just goes, oh, forget it. You know, you've earned the money. You invoice it. Now, did I answer that question?
Well, I'll let them.
Yes, you did. Thank you.
Okay.
Now, the next one is, who owns the rights to your voice on an audiobook?
Who owns the rights to your voice?
On an audiobook. Who owns the rights to your voice on an audiobook?
The producer owns it. The publisher owns it. Producer owns it. It's nothing to do. It's not. I mean, you give it away. You get paid for it, and you give it away. Of course, it can't be sampled in an AI way. We're getting to that. Is there another question there, Alex? Because I've got a list here that I want to go through.
Well, there's just the AI is the question that's coming up here. With all the AI going on, how do you make sure the audition you do, the company doesn't use it without requiring your services for the project?
Well, the union and voiceover agents have created a rider. You'll be able to get the rider from within MIA, and I'm not too sure when it's going to become. I've got a feeling we published the rider, didn't we, in the post that came out about the AI. We had an AI meeting last Thursday, and there is a rider. Which is basically something for producers to sign and agree to, that says we agree not to just sell your voice to something else or to use your voice for something else, only for this product. So it's really a bit of a work in progress, the whole AI thing. But if you didn't go to that meeting last week, anyway, it's such a big area, I don't really necessarily want to get into it now, other than you need consent, control. I control it, kind of thing. I control this, saying that you can only use my voice for the commercial that you got me for. Consent. I consent to letting you use it for blah, 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 for this much compensation. So it's always got to be those kind of three thing. This came from the American NAVA. If you want more information on how we're headed in AI, the Americans who've been at it for a couple of years, and it was members, the union were advised by members, just as our union is. It takes you to give the union the information about what's going on the ground and say, we need to do something about this. So it's called NAVA, N-A-V-A, and I think it is the National American Voice Artists. Something like that. Anyway, it's an N-A-V-A, National American Voiceover Association. Yep. And that's a website. So you'll find information on that about what they're doing. But if you have an agent, your agent should have that rider pretty soon.
Abby, there are about three or four more questions coming in, but did you want to answer some of the ones that came in before?
I'll just do the ones that came in. Quickly, so how to avoid any saliva sound once recording. you know what it's like when you go to the dentist and you get that thing put in your mouth when your mouth's full of saliva and it goes. That's what you do because it's only a little tiny bit, right? And if you get a bit wet in the mouth, as I often do, you just kind of got to stop and then go again, dry mouth. Mm. Drinking water whilst recording is great, but be really, really well hydrated when you get into the studio. Things like mouth clicks, even though they can take them out with a plug-in, a way to avoid mouth clicks is to have carbonated water. I mean, soda water is good. Pineapple juice is also good. A little sip of Coca-Cola will do it and you get a little sugar hit. But just a little bit of that will kind of help it because it is really kind of, it is a gum slap. It's a cheek slap is what it is. So helping that by going will be good. The key qualities of great voiceover artists that will make a client come to you over and over. The thing about it is to be somebody who is so comfortable in the studio and can take direction in a relaxed manner. What you'll notice when you're in the studio is that sometimes you'll just be in the actual studio and out there in the control room, there'll be a producer and an engineer and they'll be chatting away to each other and you think, well, well, well. And they've, for some reason, they might think you're there and you're listening, but you're not. And they've got you turned off. You don't want to be in there thinking, oh, shit, they're talking about the fact that I fail every read that I go through and I'm not doing it properly and I'm new, I'd be shit at this. You want to be very careful of the unraveling person in you that you need to tell to stay in the car. She or he, not helpful. So you just, if you're somehow, for whatever reason, they're not talking to you, just go back to the script. And forget about all that judgment stuff. They're not judging you. They're really not judging you. They're probably talking about a sound effect they want to put in or music or whatever. Or sometimes I'll go, sorry, are you not hearing us? Oh, sorry, well, because we were just talking about, and you go, oh, whew. But you could have been looking at the script and working out, oh, I didn't notice that before. Oh, that's interesting. I could actually, if I try next time I pop a pause after that word, it'll make the first three words of that next part stronger. So you'll be keeping on, deep diving, looking at it. You know, they are a script is never one whole thing. It's just a series of different thoughts and ideas that are linked either by commas or full stops. They're linked, but they don't necessarily have the same message in them. So really it's that, it's the calm, relaxed, and the contribution. Every time you do a read, after the time that they have said, oh, that's sounding great, that was perfect, that take, really fantastic. All right, so let's push on. Can we just make that last part just a tiny bit, just lift it up a little bit? So now they've got a take that they love and they want a little bit to be refined. When you go for this take, do a slightly different version of the things in the area that they really liked, because they might hear, God, that third sentence, that really worked. That worked that beautiful. Because when they come to editing, they can then take that small part out and put it in the hero one and it'll work better. So that's really what they're doing in the studio when they've got a script. They're listening, they've got a pencil and they've got a script and they're marking out which part of that sentence worked. They might put a little one over it. The next time you read it, no, I didn't get it for take two. Take three, the second part was really good. So really what they want to kind of get is about three different takes of everything that are working. And you might be thinking, but I didn't get through one single take without falling over a word and having to do something again. Don't worry about it. That's just... it's weird voiceover and it's not performance. There's a, you know, it's a process. And really, if I could just add that it's a process that's quite close to the way that you work as actors, where you get the material and you go home and you learn the lines or you work out what the story is, what the other characters are doing, what you're doing there, you know, you work it out. Then you go into rehearsal where you kind of talk to the director about the script, you problem solve, thoughts and ideas that you might have, all that sort of thing. Then you go to performance. So those three things, get the text, work it out, problem solve and rehearse, performance, exactly the same thing happens in voiceover in a very short little tiny box world and a pretty short amount of time, right? And But don't forget that. So don't worry about it. It's all, you won't know anything. When you first read the script off the page in the studio, be a bit shit. It's okay to be a bit shit because you've never seen it before, never read these words before. And anyway, they're a bit clunky and sideways, so you're going to have to make it make work. They're there to work with you because you're there because they know they've heard something great on your demo that says you can get there. And so the job is how we go through this practice, problem solve, rehearsal, performance. Looks so smooth, doesn't it? But it can be. It just takes a little bit of, okay, this is the bit where I can ask all the questions. This is the bit where it's okay to fall over and go, oh, hang on. I mean, when you read the script, if you fall over, don't go back to the top of the script. Just go back to the beginning of the sentence. And when you're recording at home, doing any job, do the same thing. You know, if you bugger something up, stop. Think about what you buggered up. Doesn't matter how much of a gap where you're still recording. Just think about that. And then start again and you can fix it. Now, this is in a, how much is the voiceover industry open to non-Aussie accents? Well, not a great deal. If you listen to what's out there, you don't hear a lot of accents from other places. So it would be hard to build a career just in this market. But if you're in Australia and you are from somewhere else and you have a strong accent that's somewhere else, then there's no reason why you can't be working remotely if you know what you're doing, right? If you actually know what you're doing. So that's, I think that's the thing, but it's not like it's limited. Possibly in the non-commercial area. Oh, there was a question here about, would agents be interested in having a French voiceover in talent in the database? Yeah, sure. As long as you know what you're doing, but the thing about it is, oh yeah. And besides SBS, do you know any companies who are interested in French voiceovers? I would Google French companies based in Melbourne or Sydney or wherever you are, you know. So French companies based in Melbourne, Sydney, call them up, ask them if they have a communications department because they may be creating material for in-house, you know, or for clients, for shareholders, stakeholders, that they may be requiring somebody who speaks English in the native accent, or who is French speaking or Canadian. That's English, except if they're speaking French. So there's work. It may not be in the mainstream. It may not come out of advertising. I mean, I think there is a Swedish voice doing a Swedish car at the moment. So you will get things that are specific to brands. If the brand is a French brand, or if the, you know, it's that kind of thing. Tips on warming up your voice before recording. Well, I have my favorite. So I have Blow Raspberries. I have this one. So purring is good. And then I use this great method. It's actually just the vowels and the consonants, but you just get the consonants first. So we begin with B and then we do the vowels. Baby, bye, bo, boo. Kay, ki, kai, ko, koo. Dee, dee, di, do, do. Fee, fee, fi, fo, foo. Kay, ki, kai, ko. It just goes like that. So you just play with it, being conscious that what you're doing with that is warming up your voice. But what you're also doing with that is you're warming up, you're just tuning your brain to fine detail. Yeah, remembering where you are in the alphabet, remembering the run of things, and trying to do it different every time is actually a great exercise for voiceover. That thing that I was just saying about try to do it different every time. Not so different that it's completely different volume, different energy. Don't forget they've got to edit it together, but just a slightly different take on the way the line goes. Just a slightly different take on the way the line goes. Just a slightly different take on the way the line goes. You know, there's three of them, and you just play with that facet of voiceover because that's what makes it interesting and that's what makes people want to come back to you. Oh, that person always does stuff a bit different or leaves us with a lot of stuff that we can edit together. So I think, have you got more, Alex, there that I haven't?
There's one more question here. I think you answered it at the very beginning, but it's worthwhile repeating it. Do you have any recommendations on particular companies or people to record a really good demo reel with for people just starting out in the field?
Yeah. So before you do that, you have to know what you do, because you can go to a lot of studio, depends on where you are. I'm not too sure what happens in Sydney with studios that record demos, but there are a couple of places. If you just put voice demos Sydney into it, you'll find them. But before you, and sometimes that will be attached to a course. It was like mine in Melbourne. You know, mine is attached to a course. So I do a studio course that gives people studio miles. In it, they record scripts that they would be cast for. And at the end, after it, in some time after, if they have enough that would work for a voice demo, we put together a voice demo. So studios in Melbourne will do that as well. Some studios for $300 or $400 or something will go, you can go there, book a voice demo. I call it a suck it and see voice demo, because not knowing who you are as a voice demo or what you'd be cast for, they say, here's our folder of scripts, just go through and choose a few, just choose half a dozen scripts. How would you know what to choose? How would you know who was cast for this script? You know, that's a really tricky thing to know. For that, you need to have a bit of knowledge under your belt about what kind of voice artist you are. So working with a coach or doing a whole lot of reading a lot and going, I'm pretty clear about what kind of voiceover I am. Then going to one of those studios where you can make a demo and be really clear when you look at the scripts, that's something I'd get cast for. That's not. That's a bit different. I would get cast for that. So, you know, in a way, you have to have some control over this, because, you know, spending money, any amount of money, you want to get a return on your income. So, you know, if you have great skills for this and you're passionate about it, then, you know, you will have to make some investment along the line. It's just the way it works. So I would say that the sound recording studios, and you can just Google sound recording studios, Sydney, Brisbane, Melbourne, Perth, that they're the ones where you can do a demo, just a coming off the street kind of demo. Before you do it, make sure you know what you're doing. But there are other people, there are people in Melbourne who do courses. I do it. There's Voices of Tomorrow who do a course as well. And in Sydney, there are a couple of people who do courses as well. But check them out, suss them out, and see if you can find people who've been there, and see what they think about the whole thing. And if you have an agent, you could ask her or him what they think about. Have they heard anything about this studio or this person, or has anybody recorded a demo there that they know about? And just do a bit of research on it, because you don't want to have a bad experience. No, you do not.
Now, it is 1:31. There is one more question. There are a few, but basically I think we're about to go. But Natalie McLean from MIA has put the artificial intelligence rider down there in the chat. So people feel free to obviously go in and cut and paste that.
Do that.
Abby, there's one more question basically, and then we will definitely go. And don't forget, this is being recorded, so it will be available as a podcast. What is your opinion on platforms like voices.com?
I don't know. I know that you have to pay quite big money to get into voices.com. And then they have different tiers of money. Like, give us more money and we'll give you more voices to apply for. I know of a couple of people who had some success with voices.com. My best for you would be Bodalgo, B-O-D-A-L-G-O, Bodalgo. Try Star Now, because that's good for local stuff. And the other one is Bodalgo gets the best online voiceover platform tick. You'll get a lot of people saying, oh, just send us your voice. We're looking for a voice. You get it on Facebook. You know, we're just looking for a voice to do blah, 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 blah. Just send me information, details. I'll be very careful of those. That's not the way you look for a voice artist. A lot of those things are scams. A lot of them are scams. Probably nearly all of them are scams. I just ignore them. So Bodalgo is great. The Big Mouth, the one out of New Zealand, is terrific. I think Fiverr. Also, Fiverr is the one that you would go to for games and a bit of animation if you think you would like to build some material in that area. I think the thing about animation and doing it for nothing through those kind of cheapy, sold near, I say nothing, like, you know, $20 or $50 or something, is that a lot of the material is not for high end stuff, because that's not the way they cast in high end. So it's not like you're going to be involved in something that's going to shoot off and make a whole lot of money. But what you do want to do there is actually make sure that people are not trying to sample your voice. You know, if it's an audition where you're asked to just do a few lines, I'm sure that that's okay. But what can happen with those too is that you can do that for a little while and get a little bit of stuff that you've done under your belt, and you can get samples of that and then put together an animation or a games demo. So Fiverr, Fiverr, I think it is.
Thank you. You've gone over time and you've answered all these questions, and it's been, you know, a fantastic opportunity to go over it. Abby is, as you can tell, has so much experience, there's so much knowledge there, and we are very, very grateful to you for relaying it all to us. So thank you to you. Thank you also to everyone who has been able to attend today, and of course Media Super, us, our principal sponsors. And so for any podcasts and things, just go to our website and go and click through the links, you'll find it. And we also update people on the weekly e-bulletin, so have a look at that. So lovely. Abby, thank you.
Take care, everybody.
Well, thank you, Abby, and thank you again to everyone. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast, brought to you by our principal sponsor, Media Super, and the Equity Foundation. For more information about the work we do, visit equityfoundation.org.au or follow Equity Foundation Australia on Facebook and Instagram.